You're listening to LawPod UK. It's a podcast that covers all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All comments are current at the time of publication. It's a podcast that's brought to you by the barristers at One Crown Office Row. And this edition is presented by Rosalind English.
Hello, LawPod listeners. My guest today is Ryan Abbott, Professor of Law and Health Sciences at the University of Surrey School of Law. Professor Abbott is the author of The Reasonable Robot, Artificial Intelligence and the Law. It was published last year, and he's also published widely on issues associated with law and technology, health law and intellectual property in leading legal, medical and scientific books and journals. He's also a licensed physician, attorney and acupuncturist in the United States, as well as a solicitor advocate in England and Wales. Professor Abbott, good to have you with us. May I call you Ryan in the interview?
Please, and thanks so much for having me.
Ryan is the architect of a patent case raising an interesting new point of law, which is, can an invention made by artificial intelligence without a traditional human inventor receive patent protection? Ryan, if you would, could you run us through the background facts of this application?
Sure. So I represent in the US and UK Dr. Stephen Thaler, who is the owner and developer of an artificial intelligence system he calls Davis, which is an AI architecture based on neural networks. This particular AI combines neural networks that represent simple ideas into series of neural networks that represent complex ideas, and it identifies when it generates ideas having value and novelty. So we had the AI run. It generated two inventions. One was for an emergency light beacon system, and one was for a beverage container based on fractal geometry. And we did not have a traditional human inventor in this case because no one gave the machine a problem to solve. No one trained it to solve a specific problem, and the value of its output was obvious and identified by the machine. And we did this to file legal test cases to settle a long-standing question about, well, what happens if you have AI generate creative or inventive work and you don't have a traditional, in our case, inventor or often author? The UK does have a regime for protecting computer-generated works for copyright. It's one of few countries that do. But there was really no case law on what you would do if you had a machine generate something that could get a patent. We then filed the applications first in the UK and in Europe because you don't have to disclose inventorship there for 18 months. And they examined the applications for the substantive criteria of patentability, namely whether it was new, inventive, and useful. And it was. And then we said, well, actually, this was something that was made by a machine. We don't have a traditional human inventor. And the UK, Europe rejected it. We filed it in 15 more jurisdictions. It has thus far been, I shouldn't say rejected, it's been denied on formalities ground in the US and in Germany. And in July of this year, we had a patent granted in South Africa with the AI listed as the inventor and Dr. Thaler as the AI's owner listed as the owner of the patent, followed 3 days later by a decision in federal court in Australia along the same lines, although that's now being appealed. All of the court decisions thus far have been appealed. There's recently been a UK Court of Appeal court decision on the case that split 2-1, but upheld the denial. That's being appealed as well. And so this is seeking to answer a question that is becoming increasingly important to industry as AI gets more sophisticated and more involved in research and development. You know, how does the involvement of AI in the inventive process change things?
I'm particularly, as a South African by upbringing, pleased to hear that my country has been the most forward-thinking in reaction to this problem. But let's just get into the weeds of the 1977 Patents Act in this country, in the United Kingdom. What was the problematical part of it?
Well, there were a few problematic parts of it, you know, and there really hasn't been a lot of case law on these issues. There is case law in many jurisdictions, including the United Kingdom, saying that inventors have to be natural people. But these were cases to do with whether corporations or artificial persons like corporations, like sovereign nations, could be inventors. very different than with an AI, because companies literally act through human agents. And if you were to not list a human inventor, it would be cutting someone out of moral acknowledgement and potentially economic benefits. That's different when you have an AI that doesn't literally act through people. In fact, here we didn't have someone who met inventorship criteria. So, you know, we argued those cases didn't apply. And the issues were a few in this. You know, one, could a patent subsist in something without a traditional human inventor? You know, two, who or what would be the inventor? And three, who would own the thing? Of course, no one's ever argued that an AI should own a patent, both legally because it can't, and also it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense. The AI, of course, doesn't care about getting a patent, couldn't exploit it, couldn't enter into contracts or own property. But while patents for AI-generated inventions won't motivate machines, they will motivate people to invest in, develop, and use increasingly expensive artificial intelligence systems. And that's really where the incentive goes. So again, in our case, it was, can a machine be an inventor? Does the invention need an inventor, or does it fail without a human inventor? And then on what grounds would someone be entitled to it? And this primarily involves sections 7 and 13 of the Patents Act.
And these sections essentially say what?
Well, one has to do with what makes someone an inventor, and one has to do with entitlement. So it may come as a surprise to people who aren't patent lawyers, but most patents are owned by artificial persons in the form of corporations. Most of the time, you know, it is IBM that owns a whole bunch of patents. And yes, they list someone as an inventor, but really it's IBM's patent. And there are some schemes under which, you know, for example, employees can receive some sort of benefit from very successful patents. But generally, it is a system essentially almost set up for encouraging investment, incentivizing innovation, and providing benefits to companies to stimulate entrepreneurship, commerce, and investment. Although it does also serve, you know, valuable moral functions for people. But an invention can go to an inventor. So if you invent a new widget and you're not employed by someone, you're the inventor. In preference to that, to your employer, if you have some obligation or if it is done in the right context, if it's within the scope of your employment and done with your employer's resources to further their business, in preference to you, it goes to your employer. Now, the UK actually has a surprisingly open provision on this, which says, in addition to the standard employment situation, which is where it most commonly arises, someone else can be entitled to a patent in preference to the inventor by virtue of any rule of law. We argued that Section 7 is, looking at the patent law of jurisdictions around the world, almost uniquely suited to this sort of phenomenon, having an AI-generated invention, because ownership of a patent goes in the first instance to an inventor. And we argued that while there is no statute discussing what happens with an AI-generated invention, including no statute saying it shouldn't have a patent granted, that common law rules of property ownership apply here that would grant the AI's owner ownership of the patent. So if I own a 3D printer that prints out a new beverage container, I own that beverage container, and no one would really question that. So if I own an AI that comes up with a design for a new beverage container, why should I not have that same ownership right? And that's reflected really in very ancient rules of property ownership, like accession, which dates back to Roman law, at least, which involves ownership of a thing by virtue of ownership of another thing. So you own a cow, it has a calf, you own the calf, or you own a fruit, you own the fruit from the tree, or first possession of unowned property. And we argued that actually the UK Patent Act was almost uniquely designed to allow this. As for whether an inventor has to be a natural person, nowhere is that stated explicitly in the Patent Act, even though it has been part of, as I mentioned, some cases involving, you know, claims by companies and sovereign entities to that. So, you know, so we argued that even though those weren't statutory regimes, and the statute says nothing one way or the other about an AI-generated invention, although there is one that says something about AI-generated copyrightable works, that these common law rules could apply. As to whether a machine could be an inventor, nowhere in the Act is an inventor described as a natural person, but as the actual deviser of the invention. And in our case, the AI did serve as the actual deviser of the invention. So we argued it was appropriate to list it as the inventor. And that's for a few reasons. You know, one, it lets the public know this is an AI-generated work. This isn't something done by people directly. You know, two is it preserves the meaning of human inventorship. So in 20 years, if a bunch of AI systems like Davis really start to do a lot of heavy lifting in the innovative economy, you know, in our submission, it would be wrong if I could license Davis, invent 10,000 things, and put my name down as the inventor for all of them. It would make me the most prolific inventor in human history just by pushing a button and telling a machine to do something, perhaps. And also, it does provide acknowledgement for the people who built the AI system. So we argued that was the appropriate response. Justice Burse suggested that there was really no need to list any inventor if we didn't have a natural person as an inventor. And the European Patent Office Board of Appeal, where this is pending, has made that suggestion in a preliminary analysis of the case. So we'll see what happens.
So coming at it from a non-patent lawyer's point of view, it seems extraordinary to me that whilst the Comptroller General and the court was not willing to grant his machine patent rights, they said, well, you can't have the patent rights either because your AI machine is not a human capable of passing on rights to the patent. This seems mind-boggling to me.
Well, it seemed mind-boggling to us also. Of course, again, no one ever suggested that the AI should have any kind of right in this context. You know, there could hypothetically be some reason to give an AI rights in some context. You know, for example, with self-driving cars, if you wanted to have liability and an insurance policy for a self-driving car. But I have yet to hear a reason why it wouldn't just be a lot better and easier for the manufacturer to remain liable and have to bear the cost of accidents caused by cars. You know, similarly, you could change the law to grant an AI a patent. It just wouldn't make a lot of sense. And all the incentives work the right way if the owner of the AI gets to own the patent because it encourages them to invest in building and operating these AIs. It creates a market for it. And it really serves the purpose of the patent system, which is to incentivize innovation. And yes, in some sense, these cases have been decided on very narrow formalities grounds. And I am not aware of a similar case that has denied a patent because of a failure to designate an inventor. I'm sure that there have been, but none that come to mind, you know, but the effect of that is essentially saying, if you are able to develop sophisticated AI systems that can functionally invent things, you cannot receive protection for their output. And that essentially denies protection for an entire category of inventions. And a category of inventions that are in 20 years or even 10 years may come to represent a very substantial amount of innovation. You know, pharmaceutical companies use AI to find new drug candidates and to shorten R&D timelines and to repurpose drugs. And that's a very valuable social activity. And we're saying to them with this, you know, don't bother having AI in this process, even if it can do a better job than teams of human people, because we're not going to protect it. And yes, these laws were drafted sometimes. You know, the one in the United States was written in 1955, last overhauled. This one is from 1977 in the UK, though they have been amended since then. But yes, no one has ever suggested that this was drafted with the intent of prohibiting protection for this sort of thing. And reading it hyper-literally, in our view, is not an appropriate response.
And even as I commented on my piece on this on the UK Human Rights blog, would you go as far as to say that this is an anachronistic response?
You know, I think there's a general sense that the law tends to lag behind technology, and that has been the case for a long time. And part of the reason that we brought these legal test cases was, you know, A, because industry was desperately in need of some guidance about what to do in this situation. Not only today, but importantly, so that as these technologies continue to improve, they have a path forward in protection. Two, to start a stakeholder dialogue on, you know, what do we do as the nature of invention changes and what do we really care about out of a patent system? And then three, to promote this view that really this is a very sort of important activity to protect and it should be protected. I think it is really a radical change to the way that people think about activity that we want to encourage or disencourage through the legal system, that instead of encouraging people to do things directly, we are going to be encouraging people to make machines that will do things. And whether that's with self-driving cars or McDonald's operating automatic tellers, or algorithms that sort through people's CVs and make hiring decisions, or AI that makes music, movies, or inventions. You know, we are living through now a fundamental change in the way that things are done, and it is only going to grow from here. And I think that the legal system and the political system is, you know, coming to terms with that and trying to sort through what rules will best promote human welfare.
Taking up on your point there, you said that these were test cases, and thank goodness they've been brought. What do you think the future is? Do you think it's going to be necessary to have some sort of root and branch review of the Patents Act 1977? Or do you think that a different and more forward-looking judicial approach to these questions can be done without changing the statute?
I think there's a role for both things to happen. The UK IPO, to its credit, has launched a consultation to consider these issues. I mean, indeed, these issues are very much, I think, at the forefront of not just the mind of agencies and legislators in the UK, but in many different jurisdictions. And WIPO, which is the UN agency that mainly does IP, is having a multi-stakeholder discussion about AI and IP right now, because it really challenges these existing systems in all sorts of interesting, challenging, and complex ways. So I think that there is an important role for Parliament to be looking at this and thinking about what rules will best promote the welfare of citizens in the United Kingdom. You know, but also it's our position that the current Patent Act does permit the sort of activity and subsistence of patents for AI-generated works if you have a view of the Patents Act with its purpose in mind, which is to protect this sort of innovation and the idea that inventorship was never designed to be a bar to receiving a patent. And that actually the language of the UK Patent Act entirely accommodates this, with the very open-ended section on entitlement and the fact that an inventor is not defined as a natural person, but as the actual deviser of an invention. Other jurisdictions have statutes that may be written a little more narrowly towards natural persons. For example, the United States, where we are also still challenging recent judicial determinations. And so, you know, there may be some jurisdictions, although I don't think the United States, where there is some need to change the law. But again, that would only be because decades ago when someone wrote it, they happened to use language that wasn't consistent with this, not because anyone ever made a reasoned decision not to permit something like this.
So in sum, what you're saying is that the law really does need to catch up, and catch up quickly.
It's getting there, and we're doing our best to nudge it.
Good. Well, I hope that we see results on this, Ryan, and I'll just remind our listeners, all references and citations of statutes referred to and patent offices and so on are on my post on the UK Human Rights blog accompanying this podcast. What we've been talking about is all in the context of patents, but do you see some broader application for this principle in the law?
Well, I do, and this was the subject of the book that I published last year, which you kindly mentioned, The Reasonable Robot, Artificial Intelligence and the Law. And that book argues that the law ought to apply a principle of AI legal neutrality, by which the law should not distinguish between behavior by an AI and behavior by a person. And that's because the law is really very often interested in the outcomes of behaviors and encouraging or disencouraging certain sorts of behaviors. So in the patent or copyright context, that's because the law should be encouraging the generation of socially valuable output, regardless of whether it's coming from a person or a machine. In liability law, for example, if we have a self-driving Uber and a human-driven Uber, you know, the law is trying to promote safety. And so we may want to hold both people and machines to similar levels of safety and thus require that safer options prevail. Or in the context of tax policy, employers have to pay national insurance contributions for work done by people, but not when they automate work. And that creates an unfair incentive for employers to automate, get rid of employees, even if they're not necessarily more efficient, if the machines aren't necessarily more efficient, but just to save on taxes. So actually, in many areas of the law, there is some sort of preference given to human or machine behavior, and this often has a negative impact on the goals the law is trying to achieve.
I think this sounds like a fascinating subject and worth a deep dive in another podcast episode if you're willing to come back on as our guest.
That would be lovely.
Hope to see you soon, Ryan.
Thank you.
LawPod UK is presented by Rosalind English and produced by One Crown Office Row.